Rated R. It contains violence, adult language, nudity, and adult content.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome. It's 11 p.m. Wednesday, November 27th, 2019. And thanks for joining us for the 80th episode of the Rock and Roll Shrink Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Beg your indulgence for just a quick second. We were starting with some technical difficulties, and I'm just adjusting a couple of things with that, and I appreciate your patience so much. I will be right back. All right, we are back, but I'm not sure our technical difficulties are solved yet, but I'm going to continue for the moment, and hopefully things will get sorted out. Special thanks to our host, NDB Media. I'm Casey Shapiro, and with me tonight, hopefully, is Dr. Stephen Mathis, a.k.a. the Rock and Roll Shrink. We will be taking calls from our listeners all evening during the show at 914-338-0314. You can also follow along in our live chat room on blogtalkradio.com as the show is happening. Before we begin, a couple quick disclaimers. This show does not constitute a doctor-client relationship, nor legal or medical representation of any kind. Also, the views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Mathis and Ms. Shapiro, and are not an official stance on behalf of the psychological community or its peer vetting or regulatory bodies. All right. Pardon me again for just a moment, and we're going to try to tweak something else so that we can get the show going for you guys as soon as possible. Thank you. Alrighty, everybody. I appreciate your patience. We are having a little bit of technical difficulty on the Good Doctor's end, and we're going to do a computer reboot, and hopefully that will clear things up. So let me go over our usual speeches that I give you guys when we're first starting the show up. We will be taking calls from our listeners all evening during this show at 914-338-0314. And we're happy to take your calls at any point in time during the show. We will screen calls and talk to you guys as soon as we have identified who's calling. Or you can also follow along in the live chat room on Blog Talk Radio while the show is happening. Before we begin, a couple quick disclaimers. This show does not constitute a doctor-client relationship, nor legal or medical representation of any kind. Also, the views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Mathis and Ms. Shapiro and are not an official stance on behalf of the psychological community or its peer vetting or regulatory bodies. Alrighty, so at this point in time, we do a topic-relevant bit of music played by Dr. Mathis, and we are just waiting for him to get his computer set back up, so hopefully that will be very shortly. I will give you guys a quick spoiler, since you were good enough to be patient and wait for us. Tonight's topic, which he'll get to when he's playing his song, is Who Says You Can't Go Home? Toxic Family Holidays, with apologies and credits to John Bon Jovi. And we will discuss our topic in a moment as we are waiting for Dr. Mathis to get sorted back out. Alrighty, so thank you guys for that. And let me check on that. And again, I appreciate your patience. And we will be right back.
So can you still hear me? Yeah,
I can hear you, and let me know, and Dr. Mathis, if I can stop you, we are live because the monitor setting's not picking you up, but I wanted to go ahead since I can hear you, and let's go ahead and continue.
That'd be great.
We've just gotten to the point where, if you're ready, we would love to hear some relevant music for tonight's topic, if you're able to do that for us.
Why, yes, I can. Can you hear this?
Yes, I can. Let's rock.
Okay, well, there we go. We'll be right back.
righty. As always, thank you for that, and especially considering everything it took to get it to us tonight, which we appreciate. So if you don't mind, please let us know the name of that song and the artist and its relevance to tonight's topic.
So that was a song by a band called Nazareth that most people know for Love Hurts and Hair of the Dog, but I'm going to save that for later because I'm going to be talking about them in a minute. And it's a song called Holiday, which has one of my favorite choruses on it, which is Mama, Mama, please no more Jaguars. I don't want to be a pop star. And it took me 7 years to figure out what the hell a Jaguar was until I actually went to test drive a Jaguar. And the British rep there goes, "Sir, a Jaguar is a tropical animal. A Jaguar is a fine riding motor vehicle." And I'm like, "Oh my God." And that was when I went, "Oh my God, that's what they're talking about." 7 years later. Yeah. True story.
Oh, Lord. Oh, my God. I can imagine you saying that, too, in just that tone of voice. Oh, that's perfect.
I know. I was looking at him like, really? Okay, then. Well, I do like your car.
Oh, God. There's a song I want to – it's not by Madness, but it's like by another one of those British sort of Euro pop bands from the 80s where they're – when I'm riding in my car – something something Jaguar. That's the only reason I know that pronunciation, because it's a lyric, and they made it kind of force into the rhyme right there. And I like, what the heck is? Oh yeah, okay, all right, I got it now.
Well, see, you were a lot smarter than I was. It took me 7 years to figure that out, and a test drive in a Jaguar to figure out what the hell that was. Well, it was like the first time
I've never gotten a test ride one, so you know, you're ahead of me.
They're a lot of fun. I'm not buying one, but they're a lot of fun. That was like it took me, I don't know how many years to figure out what vitamin, what the hell is vitamin E? And I'm looking up and I can't start. And, you know, 8 or 10 years later, I'm talking with one of my uncles who happens to be, you know, Scottish. And he's like, you know, those things you take, those vitamins. And I went, oh, my God. And then I realized what the lyric was, vitamin E, not vitamin E. And I'm thinking that's one word going, what the hell is vitamin E? Okay. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of like Oscar Wilde says, we're two different people separated by a common language.
Yes.
True.
Isn't that the truth? Oh, my God. Okay.
Yep,
so, as Dr. Mathis blithely mentioned, and I did give them a sneak preview while we were getting ourselves shook out, tonight's episode is entitled, Who Says You Can't Go Home? Toxic Family Holidays, and with apologies and credit to John Bon Jovi, which we will discuss in a moment. So before we begin our topic discussion, let's first go to the Rock and Roll Shrink Recalls, a moment of rock music trivia stories as recounted by Dr. Mathis, if you would, sir.
So since I'm doing a song by Nazareth, and since they're one of my favorite unsung heroes, no pun intended for a change, I thought I'd give a little backlog history of Nazareth, because most people don't realize they're still together and making records. They probably have, I don't know, 15 albums out. Most people think, you know, they kind of went away after. Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. So they're originally from a small town in Dunfermline, and I'm probably mispronouncing that, in Scotland. And they started out doing sort of an Beatles and Stones inspired band. And they took their name. People go, oh, it's some kind of, you know, Jewish rock band. No, they took their name from the band's lyric of The Weight, where it goes, you know, pulled into Nazareth, was feeling about 10:30. That's where they got their name from. So they moved to London in the early 70s, might even been 1970, and released their first record. And then they got a little bit of attention and then released their second record, which was called Exercises. The first one was just Nazareth. And they went on tour and supported Deep Purple. They were the opening act for Purple, which then got Roger Glover, the bass player for Deep Purple, involved with their production. So their next record, Razzmatazz, which I think was in 73, Glover actually produced it. And the two songs out of that were Broken Down Angel and Bad Bad Boy that made radio time. Then Loud and Proud, which came up after that, which had a cover of Joni Mitchell's song, This Flight Tonight, which they did a really good job of. And then Rampant, which came out in 74, which had a cover of a 60s psychedelic band called Tomorrow, which started out with Steve Howe, who then left there and went to Yes, called My White Bicycle. And I hadn't never even heard of the band Tomorrow. And when I saw the credits on the bicycle, I went, who the hell is Tomorrow? You know, who are these guys? And I'm looking them up back in the day. I'm like, oh, wow. And there's some psychedelic late 60s band. I like Nazareth's version better. Sorry, guys. And then in 75, Hair of the Dog was released, which is their thing to put them on the map. And that was actually produced by their guitarist, Manuel Carlton. And Roger Glover was pretty PO'd about it. So he's like, okay, well, you guys can just do it. And so they put that record out, and that's the one that has Hair of the Dog off of it, which made them uber famous, which everybody thinks the name is Son of a Bitch, but it's not. And the other song off that made them famous is Love Hurts, which was originally written by Bootlow Bryant, which was originally, I think, done by the Everly Brothers, but I digress. So that is what got them, like, uber famous. And then everything after that was kind of downhill in the sense of they didn't have a lot of popularity, at least in this country. They were pretty big over in Europe and Germany also. And so they added a second guitar player, Zal Clemmensen, I think in 79, and they released No Mean City and Malice in Wonderland, which is where the holiday song comes from. And that was, I think, in 81. They were also the movie Heavy Metal, the kind of cartoon movie that came out in the early 80s. They did a cut off that called Crazy, parentheses, a suitable case for treatment. So while they continued to tour Europe and were really popular, they kind of lost popularity here. Manuel Carlton left, and they brought in Billy Rankin as a guitarist. Had a keyboard, various keyboardists through their inceptions, which included John Locke, who was the original keyboard player for the band Spirit, Randy California's band. And so he played with them on and off, doing the studio and on tour. And then eventually Billy Rankin was replaced by Jimmy Morrison, who is still their guitarist to this day. An interesting story about them is, you know, back when Guns N' Roses did their cover record, The Spaghetti Incident, which I think was in 93, they did a cover of Hair of the Dog. Did a pretty good job of it, too. But that came about because Axl Rose, when he got married, had invited the band to play his wedding, and they declined. So I think somehow that spurred him on to record one of their records on their cover tune. But I'm not quite sure how that evolved, but I do know that that's what happened. And they continue to tour to this day with Jimmy Morrison. And I think their current keyboard player, when they use a keyboard player, is Ronnie Leahy. They've had the original other three guys up until 99. And at that point, Daryl Sweet, who was their original drummer, they were on tour and had a heart attack and died at like 50, 51. And I don't know the details behind that, but he was replaced by Pete Agnew, their bass player's son, Lee, who was Daryl Sweet's drum tech up to that. So he just kind of stepped in the position. John Locke, who was touring with them up until 2006, died of cancer at 62. And they have since, had different keyboardists in the studio, but they typically play as a four-piece to the day. Dan McCafferty, who was their original singer, continued to sing with them up until he contracted some illness, and I don't remember what the heck it was, and officially left the band in 2013. And with his blessing, was replaced by a person named Osborne, who I'd never even heard of, Linton Osborne, and not any relation to Ozzy, and doesn't spell his name the same way either. And as soon as he got on tour and started playing with them, and they started to record, he got some kind of virus, and he had to withdraw from the band. So now they have the lead singer is Carl Sentence, who originally has sung with the band Persian Risk and also with Geezer Butler's side project, the Geezer Butler Band, who's Geezer is the bass player for Black Sabbath. So the only original member left in the band currently is Pete Agnew, the bass player. So everybody else is a new member, but they are continuing to record, and they released an album with Carl Sentence. I think, can't remember, 2015 maybe, 2016, I don't remember. But they released a new record with him. It's really good. I've got it. I have every one of their records. I like them a lot. So they are still going strong today with only one original member, sadly. So that's kind of the story. But a lot of people think they went away after the Hair of the Dog record, and that is definitely nothing could be further from the truth. So there you have it.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
that's fair. Oh, thank you for that. Yeah, no, I had absolutely no idea.
Yeah, most people don't.
So good. You know, well, maybe they will get a little bit more love now that we got the word back out. You know, you never know.
Well, anytime I can promote a band that doesn't get enough love, or a luthier, as in the case of a couple of shows ago, that doesn't get enough love, I'm all about it.
Yes, good, definitely. And that'll stay in the archives. So, you know, hopefully we'll be out there spreading the word for a long time to come with any luck.
Yeah, I may have to call Pete all Agnew and go, hey, I want my 10%.
I'm sure he'll get right on that.
All right. I'm sure I'll get a thank you card and a wet handkerchief
cool.
or something.
Ooh, I don't even want to ask him. I'm sure there's a story.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Yeah, the listeners definitely don't want to hear this one, let me tell you.
No, probably not. It's not that kind of network. All righty. So thank you
yes.
for that. And again, we will be taking calls from our listeners and questions in the online chat room throughout the evening until around midnight. So feel free to give us a call. And again, the number is 914-338-0314. Okay, so tonight's show is called Who Says You Can't Go Home? Toxic Family Holidays. So with Thanksgiving right around the corner and Hanukkah, Yule, Festivus, Christmas, and New Year's not far behind that, our society is inundated with heavy marketing and romanticized nostalgic images of how the holidays should be, both for ourselves and people around us. Some or even most of these images are compelling and lovely, a time of family reunions, plentiful feasting, parties, merriment, a break from the everyday, and a magical, nostalgic fantasy that ties together the holidays of the past and the hopes for the future. We are not here to suggest that these images are bad and wrong. We do want to talk about some aspects of the marketing, media, and lore our culture has created around the winter holiday season and the end of each year. It's not fun, but it's truthful and necessary to remember that these family reunion-focused holidays can be stressful, painful, resentful, and lots of other faults, or even toxic for some people. It is also important to realize and accept that as various people all grow up and become adults with their own preferences, lives, and obligations, that they will certainly not all prioritize the exact same rituals and traditions that we might. It's also crucial to realize that some families were not supportive and healthy, and there are people who would be content to just about never go back to them. And in those situations, many times others put too much pressure on people to conform to the Norman Rockwell reunion imagery, not stopping to think about the toxic or abrasive consequences of forcing certain people back together. And last, it is vital that those who don't want to participate, for understandable reasons or not, to learn some healthy and effective coping strategies for addressing the social pressures to conform. So tonight we want to talk about our cultural obsession with holiday nostalgia, making new traditions or adapting to new lives, and dealing with toxic families and societal holiday pressures in no particular order. So before we get started, I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything you'd like to say before we dive in.
I'm good. Let's go.
All righty, let's do the thing. Okay. First, I wanted to remind our listeners about other helpful episodes of our radio show that talk about some topics that tie into various aspects of tonight's discussion. You can find them on iTunes or on blogtalkradio.com in the archives by searching for them by title or keywords. I will also post this cheat sheet list on our Facebook page, and there is a master list on the Facebook page that is pinned to the top. So if you guys can't take, you know, a copy of this list right now, just go to the Facebook page and pick it up off of there. I have pinned that to the top for you. So just as a kind of a highlight here, episode 3 was on gaslighting from 2016. Episode 9, part 1 of 3 on holiday depression. 10 on maintaining sobriety and health during the holidays, part 2. And 11, reasonable and rational New Year's resolutions, part 3. Episode 30, coping with someone else's pathologies from 2017, which definitely is going to come into play over the holidays for some of you. Episode 34, take the power back, which was about not letting other people run you. Episode 35, The Grand Illusion, which is about the myth of perfect holidays. 36, Another Auld Lang Syne, about resolutions and guilt. Episode 41, Coping with Toxic People, from early 2018. 52, The Psychology of Advertising and Marketing, from fall 2018. Episode 56, The Psychology of Holidays. Episode 57, Setting Boundaries on Holidays. I know you all are seeing a pattern here. We try to do stuff that's relevant to what's on your mind during the season while we're talking. Episode 68, Wish You Were Here, Grief, Loss, Mourning, and Closure. And that's from spring of 2019. And last week's episode, 79, The Show Must Go On, about perfectionism and people-pleasing. So all of these different episodes are about things that have to do with what we're going to talk about tonight, and they might help you with an expanded discussion on particular aspects. So let's talk about our cultural obsession with holiday nostalgia. Coping with various aspects of traditions and holidays is one of our most frequently analyzed topics from a variety of perspectives. Even at its most positive, it is an emotionally heavy topic for pretty much all of us. As a culture, we value ritual and tradition. And in general, we enjoy a built-in aspect that focuses on reunion, nostalgia, and family. We are notoriously bad about remembering to and prioritizing creating that for ourselves, and often rely on these built-in events to ensure it happens at all. Some of the reasons that people get in so many arguments about big family holidays, if you will notice, there's fewer of these kinds of arguments about stuff like New Year's, Labor Day, and so on, are that we are so in love with the imagery and the fantasy of perfection that anything that could spoil that, deserved or not, we refuse to address, or we get demonstrably angry or sad until someone else fixes it. For example, our whitewashing the history of how some holiday traditions even came to pass, a growing problem with more cultural awareness in mixed culture and interfaith or agnostic families. Our refusal to face that some family members may have been less than mutual, too rude and vulgar, too intolerably abusive, and that there just may have to be that glaringly empty chair at the dinner table to remind us about it. Our realization too late that our past behavior has caused us to be alone at the holidays, wallowing in depression. Our realization that we haven't even done anything ugly, yet we are still too far away or otherwise inconvenient, and are nevertheless left alone and forgotten about for the holidays. We commit to jobs, extended families, affordable lives, or other living situations that make frequent reunions logistically or financially difficult. We change as people over time, and reunions don't provide us with a nostalgic past for which we may be mourning, which then can make us resentful. Or we were unfortunate enough to not have had much family tradition to treasure to begin with. And so every year we're reminded of what we never could have, and we take it personally. And not that that's bad or inappropriate, but it is emotional and makes people have arguments. There's such a struggle to balance multiple expectations and abilities to meet them, and not everything is compatible, wanted, or even possible. We're also inundated with marketing and media that implies that the magic holiday images are everyone's goal and that we have somehow failed if we don't get them. We get busy. We feel insecure or unsatisfied with our everyday lives. We look forward to the holidays somehow fixing this, quote unquote, but that doesn't always happen. On the TV, in the movies, at the mall, it always looks on the outside like other people have it all figured out. But do they? And with that, I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see what you have to say about that.
Well, as most of us know, TV and movies and theater are all fantasy. And while they reflect society or reflection of society, and in some cases help to mold society, as in this, I think they're probably a little of both. Excuse me. They do present the ideal, and many of us aren't the ideal, and we fall short of that, and then we feel bad about it when we don't. And, you know, it's very regrettable. And when we get to the toxic family and pressure part, I'll share a personal story that listeners might find interesting about holidays. But what I can say to folks is, you know, despite your best effort, and in some cases, despite your family's best effort, the proverbial feces at the rotating blades and things don't turn out the way you'd like. And what I would say is, just if it does, and it's unfortunate, but if it does happen, don't take it personally and don't see it as a failure. Just see it as another life event that didn't turn out exactly the way you would prefer it. But there's things you can learn from it, and there's things you can benefit from, even if it's not exactly what you want to do. And since we're going to talk about adjusting some of that in subsequent sections, I don't want to spoil it by, you know, giving stuff away now. So I'll say some of my comments to the later sections of tonight's topic discussion.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. And we will come back to that, and then we can discuss those in
sure.
a few minutes. Okay. So let's talk next about making new traditions or adapting to new lives. So we love when cool new things happen or new people come into our lives. We do not generally like when the events end or die off or the people go away, especially when we were not ready for it or have no control over it. At the end of the show, we will talk about some strategies for making your own traditions at the holidays. But what we do need to acknowledge is that there is something in us that gets mad about that if we weren't looking to do so. If we find a new cool thing, we love it. But if we have to do it because an old beloved tradition has been spoiled or otherwise can't happen anymore, such as if you moved away or if a host passes on, we often resent the change we were not seeking. New traditions can work when we choose them or when we do them together as a family or with close friends. We must be mindful that people have different preferences and priorities. They may not be that pressed about who is hosting dinner or putting lights on the house. They may not be able or even interested in doing what matters most to others. People's circumstances change over time. A lot of stress and quarreling can happen over our expectations and our unwillingness or inability to cope with this. And again, I will check in with you for comments, Dr. Mathis.
So what I would say is what most of us find distressing about this, whether we get angry about it or feel sad or feel like a failure or to get depressed or anxious or whatever, is because what we're really in love with is the image. We're in love with the fantasy of what we've been sold and what it's supposed to be, what it quote unquote should be. And so when we don't get that, we feel either as if we failed or that we feel like we've been cheated. Because we want to be those happy people on the TV screen or the movie screen or the theater. We want to be those folks with happy endings. And, you know, so do I. I mean, you know, all of us want that. But the reality of life is that that's not always going to be possible. And so what we have to do is come to terms with the reality and stop living in the fantasy and stop, distressing ourselves over something that may not happen. It's just wasted energy. Better to spend your energy doing something different, creating a new tradition, and making it a happy tradition and not doing it, even though you may have to. It's kind of like I say some of my court-mandated patients. Okay, I realize you got to be here because it's like you got to be here, you got to go to jail. And for some of you, you'd probably rather be in jail than be in here with me, but that's another story. Be that as it may, let's see if we can make the best of an unfortunate situation and see if we can learn something and create something cool for you. And I find that if I can get folks to do that, they can actually benefit from the experience, even though they may not have wanted to be there in the first place at all. And I think the same thing is true of this. If we can sort of say, okay, let's just start over and let me create something different that I would like and go from there. And sometimes that's the best you can do. It's foolish to try to hold on to something when you have evidence that it's clearly not working, or it's not gonna, the likelihood of it working is slim and none.
Got it. Okay, fair enough. Let's go on to the next section. Sorry, my computer is doing something stupid here. Pardon me. Okay, there we go. All right, so the next thing I want to talk about is dealing with toxic families and societal holiday pressures. So first, let's kind of straighten out the differences between awkward and unpleasant families and toxic or unhealthy families. So there may be a bit of difference between family members who are noisy, rude, vulgar, or other forms of socially awkward and unpleasant. And while they may say upsetting things, I believe that we can all agree that there are people like the drunk relative who insists on telling fart jokes on one side of the category. But that way on the other side are the actually harmful family members, such as relatives that may have been abusive in some way, actively engage in attacking comments or behaviors that you can't just ignore and pretend aren't happening, and so on. The distinction matters when it comes to how one deals with these relatives at holiday time. An influence is how much we're willing to put up with before we just leave, get up and fight, or don't show up at all. We are pelted for weeks with ads, songs, TV shows, movies, and so on, pressuring us to do the Norman Rockwell dance. And on top of it, you're on a hard deadline to bury that hatchet and come home and act like nothing's wrong. Often those of us with a conscience end up taking the blame for a broken up holiday because we're going to be the ones who draw the boundary line or say no to the toxic person. And I didn't put this in my notes, but basically what I'm trying to tell you guys is there are fights that are worth having because, Aunt Judy slept with so-and-so's husband, you know, that's actually kind of damaging. But it's different than, you know, your younger brother constantly picking his nose at the table or something. You have to pick your battles. And that's why making this distinction actively matters. Sometimes there are people who say they have toxic family members, and really it's just because it's like eating at the Simpsons, and that's really not the same thing. So having straightened that out, I'm going to defer to you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything else that you want to mention about this part.
Well, and also, that's a really good distinction. Also, there's some family members, some families that started out okay, but because of various mental conditions or physical conditions like stroke or depression or whatever, once semi-functional families or even functional families have become toxic ones. And that was the case with my family. And I'll tell you the story when we get to setting descending boundaries area, because I think that's a good example of how I handled a very unfortunate and sad and annoying scenario with my own folks around the holidays.
Okay, fair enough. Let me go over to here. So let's talk about setting boundaries. And this is a little bit longer. This is probably the most important part of the show here. So I'm going to read to you guys from an article called How to Reduce Holiday Stress by Setting Strong Boundaries by Haley McGee, who is a certified codependency recovery coach. And she writes at tinybuddha.com. And in this section, which is subtitled Setting Boundaries with Family Members. And some of what she's talking about is more the fart jokes and nose picking family members, but some of these principles can help you no matter what. So she says, quote, For most of my life, I struggled to set boundaries with my parents because they raised me, fed me, clothed me, and supported me financially until I reached adulthood. At first, it was hard to instate boundaries because I felt I owed them everything. Boundaries illuminate and challenge these unspoken expectations. Whereas before, you may have been the resident people pleaser or overgiver, setting boundaries changes your role in your family system. They enable you to prioritize your own needs and give at a sustainable rate. Boundaries can protect your material possessions, your emotions, your physical space, or your spiritual beliefs. They are not quote-unquote mean. They simply draw a line between what belongs to you and what belongs to others. As I prepare to have difficult conversations about boundaries, I like to keep these four key principles in mind. One, when we refuse to set a boundary, we prioritize other people's comfort over our own needs. Two, difficult honesty is not unkindness. Three, you can manage your boundaries or manage other people's feelings, but you can't do both. And four, other people are not mind readers. Don't expect them to be. And here are some common holiday scenarios in which boundaries might come in handy. Example one, it's okay not to go home for the holidays. Two, it's okay to need a break if you're hosting. Three, it's okay to need alone time if you're visiting. Four, it's okay to disengage in controversial conversations. Five, it's okay not to be okay with your family's dynamics. But what if they don't like my boundaries? The question I get often asked the most is, okay, so I set a boundary, but what if they don't like it? What if they don't do what I ask? And that is the end of the quote from the article, and then I have some things to say here. So these are my own words, not from the article. The best way to present a change in your boundaries with family is to declare what you are doing while also offering a positive alternative, if this is possible, such as, I really would feel better staying in a nearby hotel for Christmas, but let's decide some things to do together while I'm back home. After that point, it's their responsibility to work with what you're willing and able to give. And family members hearing a boundary, and this means I'm addressing you guys. If you are a family member and somebody puts a boundary on you, this is absolutely not time to guilt trip or nag them out of it. Your job is to make yourself okay with what is offered. Like at the dinner table, if peas are offered, have peas or don't have peas, but don't be screaming about the string beans. The expectations and disappointments are your responsibility to get over. So many of you are out there likely saying some version of, oh, it's easier said than done, or not with my family. But at the end of the day, there's no choice but that it's going to have to be up to you to dictate how things go, or else you will just be letting them run you for the rest of your life. That's why I included the episode earlier about not letting people run you. If you need help learning to say no, asking for what you need, being not sucked back into the same old toxic bullcrap dance of years before, then go get on that work right away. Whether it is the support of friends, peer groups, professional help, or any combination of these that helps you, but take charge of it. Be the one who makes the decisions about your own participation from now on. Here are some other things you can try out, depending on the level of control or else disengagement you need with the festivities in order to cope and enjoy the time in some way. So here's some stuff you can do. Consider hosting the gathering if it helps to control who comes over and what goes on. Consider not hosting the gathering if it's more helpful to have the ability to just leave or not show up at all. Consider surrounding yourself with media you control, so that you decide how much of what message you deal with. This includes movies, TV shows, music, radio, and even print media in your home, portably with you out and about, and in vehicles traveling. Consider taking a media break entirely or filling your media with distinctly non-holiday selections especially anything that makes you feel happier or at least laugh and be distracted. Expectations. Manage yours. People don't magically change much, quickly or often. Give people room if they are trying to improve. You know, don't argue to put them in the box they've always been in if they're really trying, sincerely. But don't cling to any fantasies of saving the day if the familiar patterns start in. Have an exit strategy and don't second guess it while you're in the heat of the moment. Make a distinct point to avoid, leave, or never initiate conversations on any of the following kinds of topics as much as you can help it. Sometimes the old wisdom really was better. Including but not limited to the following kinds of topics. Children, babies, pregnancy, raising kids, parenting, and any related topics. Education or lack thereof. You know, it's fine to say, oh, I got a scholarship to Harvard, but don't say it in a way that the guy who feels bad because he quit high school is going to feel like a dumbass in the corner. Don't do that. Health and disability, unless directly asked, such as, how's Uncle John after his heart attack? That sort of thing. Money, wealth, poverty, salaries, and personal finances. You can say, oh, I got a raise. Do not tell them it was $50,000 because then somebody's going to feel bad. Politics of any sort, including candidates and hot political issues of the moment. Race, culture, and nationality. And a lot of people don't realize they're asking or saying inappropriate stuff about that because we have really learned some ugly habits in our culture about that, and we don't even realize we're doing it. We are only just now kind of getting to the point where we realize. So step back and think about what's coming out of your mouth with that stuff. Same thing with sex, sexuality, relationship status, not volunteered in introductions like, hi, this is my girlfriend, or not common knowledge, and dating. You don't need to know if they're sleeping together. You don't need to know when they're getting married. You don't need to know if that's a guy or a girl. Honestly, if they're being vague about it, that might be on purpose. And unless you're going to be screwing them, it's none of your business. Sit down and have some turkey. Work or jobs, if it gets awkward, you know, somebody's under or unemployed, stagnation at their job, etc. Other controversial news not already covered here. Basically, any topics which make people feel excluded, lesser, or other. If you can navigate these without making someone feel left out or judged, that's a judgment call to make. You know, if you're having a pleasant conversation and you can do it and not make the people who didn't do it not feel bad, then go ahead. But, you know, just be mindful if you're the person who didn't have that, do they feel like they screwed up? And, you know, navigate that so you don't leave people out. Good topics to redirect with might be, do you have any fun hobbies or interests? I'm assuming you're talking to somebody who's a guest. Maybe you don't know that well, or it could be a relative you don't see very often. Have you seen the local point of interest, you know, for out-of-town guests or new people? So what's new since we last talked? And let them decide what to share. Don't ask them, like, so did you marry that guy you're shacking up with? Don't say that crap. Where did you meet person if they're a guest of somebody? And that's fair, you know. So where did you meet my nephew? You know, that's a fair question. But, you know, don't harp on things. And if the answer is awkward, you know, they may give you a vague answer. Let that be the answer. Move on, have some turkey. Keep conversations short. Circulate often. If there are family members that are healthier for you, possibly agree in advance for them to help extricate you from awkward or ugly conversations. Like, I would really love to talk about your dress that's halfway down to your boobs, Aunt Mary, but I gotta go do the potatoes over here. Bye-bye. And take breaks from socializing. You might even set up a check-in with a lifeline buddy. You know, people go out on dates and they have somebody that they can call or text to make sure that they, you know, they're leaving their date when they're supposed to and everything's cool. Well, get a lifeline buddy for your Thanksgiving or Christmas holiday, and you could privately call or text them for a moment of sanity or a breath of fresh air. You know, that's perfectly valid. Step out, have a drink or, you know, a non-alcoholic drink if you need to, or not have a cigarette, and text your buddy and say, oh my God, Uncle Henry's fart jokes are making me nuts. You know, do what you got to do. Decompress. All right. Check in with you, Dr. Mathis. See what you want to add here.
Yeah, I would also add, don't talk about spiritual or religious issues, particularly if they differ greatly from those of the family, if yours differ from the family's, because that often results in really nasty stuff. And don't allow your family to engage you in those if they try to bring it up.
Yes, that's a good one, and I'm sorry I forgot that. That's an excellent point.
Yeah, thank you. What I was going to talk about, too, is some of my own struggles with this. My family and I typically, even though my parents had a really kind of conflict-habituated marriage and really had no business getting married, much less staying together for 50-something years, but I digress. Several years before they died, my mom and dad both had strokes, and dad had a major stroke, and mom had a bunch of transischemic attacks, and she was starting to lose her stuff, and she was really the last, probably the last 8 or 9 years my parents had, the conflicts had gotten really, really crazy. And the last time I went home for Christmas, which was probably five or so years before they actually died, my dad died first and then my mom. I kept saying to them, could you guys please stop this yelling and screaming and crazy stuff? I don't come home to deal with this crap. And, oh, we're sorry, we'll do better next time. Well, this went on for 10 years. And finally I went home and it got really bad. And then they started taking some of the crap out on me and it was really sad. And I spent most of that Christmas day. My parents have had a large plot of land where their home is, probably, I don't know, 30 acres or so, and a lot of it's wooded. And I spent most of the day after this blew up we had basically walking around the property crying and hugging trees and just hanging out and thinking what a fool I was to come home and yada, yada, yada. And so after dinner, I said, that's it. These guys have had a ridiculous amount of tries. I've tried to be nice about it. I've threatened. I've pleaded. I'm not doing this anymore. This is ridiculous. And I went and I had dinner, and I thanked them for dinner, and I went in the back and packed and left Christmas night. And I never went back.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean I didn't speak with them on the phone, but of course they tried to give me this, you're punishing us. No, I'm not. I am not punishing you guys. I am saving myself. That's what I'm doing. I'm putting myself in a healthy place. You folks, you folks evidently have no business doing what you do, but it's really not my place to tell you that. You're not a patient of mine. You didn't ask my opinion, but I'm not going to tolerate this crap. And if it works for you, that's great. Far be it from me to tell you how to live your lives, but I don't come home for cacophony. I don't come home for screaming and yelling and name calling. Well, we're not doing it to you. Well, yeah, you did some of it this time, but, that be that as it may, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to see it. I'm just not coming home anymore. I'm sorry, guys. If one of you wants to visit me at a time, you're welcome to come visit me in Atlanta. I'm not coming home anymore with the two of you together. It's just not going to happen. And that was the last time I went home for the holidays. And, of course, they tried to guilt me into it. They tried to tell me, you're just, No, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm saving what little sanity I have left. I'm not doing this anymore. I want to remember us when you folks were less pathological. They were never not pathological. They were two very different people who had no business being married, bottom line. But that wasn't my call. But it was my call not to put myself in the middle of it. And even as I think about it today, which, here we are, 10, 12 years past that, I still feel sad when I talk about it. I recognize I'm feeling sad talking about it now. But I did the right thing. I never looked back. I didn't second guess myself. I was sad that I had to do it. I regretted having to do it. I wish I hadn't have had to do it. But I did. And, what I've tried to do during the holidays, like I'm going to do tomorrow, is I invite a bunch of friends over. And cooking for me is therapeutic. And so I'm going to make a lot of stuff. And one of my guests is coming over, was going to bring several pieces of food items, different dishes. And so I'm just going to get together with four or five friends. And I started creating a different, celebration for myself and a different memory. And while I will certainly probably never not wish it had been different, I recognize that it wasn't going to change. And then if I continue to do that, shame on me for doing it and expecting a different result. That's not reality. And I'm pretty good about dealing with reality, even though I don't always like it. And this was certainly one of those situations. But, you know, I made a boundary and I stuck to it. And I gave them plenty of opportunities 4 or 5 years in a row. And they mucked it up every single time. And I went, I'm done. Not doing it anymore. So it can be done. My mom and I were very, very close. And I felt real bad about it. But I felt worse staying there and hearing their yelling and screaming. And then sometimes I rolled over into yelling and screaming at me for no reason because they were pissed off at each other or whatever. And I just didn't have time for it. I just wasn't going to take it. That's the bottom line. And so I never went back after that. I never went home for a visit ever after that for any reason at all. They could come see me one at a time, but not together. So that was my boundary. And I stuck to it.
Yeah, you know, that's what we've been talking about tonight. Sometimes you got to do that.
Yes, absolutely. I had to do that I did it because I took my power back, which is what I tell everybody to do. And I said, you know, I'm tired of giving my power away to these people. These people are not doing healthy things, and I don't need to be a part of it. You know, that's just the bottom line. And I felt bad about it, but I couldn't change it. I tried to, you know, I pleaded, I yelled, I screamed, I did all kinds of stuff. And they kept making promises, and they went back on the promises, and I'm done. Not doing it. Just can't do it anymore. I could have, but I won't. I refuse to do it. So
Yeah. If
I can do that as close as I was with my mom, if I could do that, I think any of our listeners can probably do it too.
Yep. Oh, I'm sorry it came to that, but yeah, that's a great example of what it might take. And
yeah,
I know, you know, those of us who are actually, you know, have ethics and some sense
yeah.
of healthy
have
boundaries.
Have a conscience and a brain. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we end up being the ones who it takes us harder because we realize what's gone on and mm-hmm. we realize we're going to have to step up and say the thing that we dread because no one else is going to. And it's
and you're going to catch and your likelihood of you catching flack for it is also real high. And you know that in advance and you just, you know, you just have to do it because the consequence of not doing it to me was worse, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's, you know, what we're talking about tonight. It's unfortunate and we're sad about it because we get it. And if other people got it, we wouldn't be having these arguments with them. And that's kind of the whole point. That's why we're here.
Yep. Yep.
So getting close to the top of the hour. So in summary, we hope now that our listeners better understand how to deal with both the expectations and realities on all the different sides of major family reunion type holidays, especially when these events highlight unhealthy, dysfunctional, or downright harmful family dynamics. In the end, you got to take charge of your own experience and make changes if you're unhappy about how the holidays go for you. And if you can't change it for this year, I know Thanksgiving's tomorrow, and a lot of you may be listening from places where you've already traveled to. Use these experiences in 2019 to help you decide what you're going to change next time. You know, no time like the present to get started working on it.
Definitely.
So this concludes our show on toxic family holidays. And I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything else that you want to add about this topic in general before we close.
No, I'm good. I would just say to the listeners, honor yourself. Be smart. Honor yourself. And if you can't have a rational holiday with you, an enjoyable holiday, why do it? It's not a holiday. You know, that's the whole, ruins the whole point of having a holiday. Make your own holiday, create your own memory, and start doing cool things for yourself.
Yep. And, you know, there are some people out there I talked to putting the show together who they're so done with it, they kind of don't want to do any holiday at all. And, you know, if that is what brings you peace, okay, then we'll just do the not a holiday and enjoy the day off. You know, that if that's what you got to do, that's fine. So on behalf of myself, Dr. Mathis, and NDB Media, I want to thank our listeners this evening and give our appreciation to those of you who may be joining us later via podcast, iTunes, etc. So we'll see you guys in 2 weeks with a new topic for discussion on Wednesday, December 11th, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on blogtalkradio.com. We'd like to give a shout-out to other NDB Media shows coming up in the next couple of weeks. The Walking Dead online viewing party is on hiatus in conjunction with the TV show until February 23rd, 2020, so please come back in late winter and join us then when we pick back up. I did not have any new dates for our other network shows at this time, but check back with NDB Media on blogtalkradio.com for new episodes of our regular favorites coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook, on Twitter, on iTunes, and at www.rockandrollshrink.com. Thanks for joining us. Good night, everybody, and rock on.